All right. So we all know Clifford's a pretty smart guy. That said, every single episode, I always ask him, okay, you're recording, right? And, before this, his mic, it would automatically start recording for him. So, I'd ask him that, and he'd always say yes. But then, turns out, this time, really wasn't. It's like the equivalent of jumping out of a plane without checking your parachute. So, Clifford screwed up. His sound's gonna be bad this episode. Sorry for the inconvenience. This is only a special. It's not really required to listening, I guess. So, you could just skip it if it really bugs you. All right. The other parts of this will be good in the coming weeks. You're recording? Let me get my notes. All right, cool. Well, then let's start. Clifford, we're back again.
Welcome back, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you. By the time I release this, you'll probably be traveling, so I'm not going to ask you how you are because it's not important. You want to introduce what we're doing today, or should I? I don't know if you even
Sure,
fully
sure.
know.
So, in the interim between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, if you've listened to the past episode or so, you may already know, we're planning some intermediate episodes, some of which we decided to use to delve into the Silmarillion. Some of you may have read the Silmarillion, some of you may never have heard of it. I consider it sort of the Old Testament of Tolkien's Middle Earth. It's like the creation stories. It sets up the world that The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings take place in. And Patrick has pulled out a series of stories about Gondolin, which is basically a couple chapters out of the Silmarillion about a particularly cool place that all tie together. So with that, Patrick, you gonna add anything? Have at it.
Yeah, I'll add some stuff here. So we're kind of experimenting here. We like we said, we need to kill some time and hold you over until Lord of the Rings, till we're ready for that, and then we're both in around to record it. And so for this one, so our original idea was to talk about Gondolin, and originally we were just gonna do like the exciting parts of it. Not that there's boring parts really, but we decided just to expand it, just to give like the full idea of it. Partly just to see how this goes, like whether this will be successful or not. Because what we're going to end up doing, this is going to be like a three-part special thing, basically. So tonight we'll do like a setup of all the a couple of mini stories that lead to creating Gondolin, so we're just pulling at random from the Silmarillion, basically, that all pertains to Gondolin. And then the next two will do like the real action part of the end of that story. But yeah, we're gonna see how it goes here. I'm gonna kind of basically just break down or go through these stories, like tale telling. It's part of the real fun for me of this podcast is to actually do that. So, and Clifford will be here to jump in so that it doesn't get stale of me just talking.
I'm the audience representative, you might say.
Yeah, and you just bring up whatever because I don't want this to get boring. All right, we're gonna see how this goes. This is kind of new territory for us. So we're going to start with how Gondolin came to be found. So Clifford, what do you remember about it? Because we've talked about it before.
So for context, I have read the Silmarillion before, or Patrick and I read it aloud on a camping trip once.
And I'm very certain you forgot most of it.
Probably. I remember the gist of it, but the characters can be hard to remember. Gondolin, however, I do remember being a particularly interesting city in a valley in the mountains. It kind of had like a Kashmir, like mystery city quality in my mind. I believe it was one of the greatest cities of the elves.
Yes.
And it's...
In Middle Earth.
In Middle Earth. But it was like a city-state, sort of.
It was a hidden city. Well, it's yes. A mini-state, I guess, sure, but yeah.
Felt like a little bit medieval and a little bit futuristic.
Okay, that's fair.
And I remember the area being not really where The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings takes place. I'm going to say northwest, generally, of where The Hobbit takes place, at least.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So it's basically just directly west of where Bilbo lives.
Okay,
so like there's, if you look at the Lord of the Rings map, there's a mountain chain in the west called the Blue Mountains.
This didn't come up in The Hobbit at all, right? This is if Bilbo had walked in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So from the side of The Hobbit.
Right. Okay, well, the Blue Mountains are where Thorin and the dwarves that went on the journey were originally hanging out.
Gotcha.
And if you go to the other side of that, there's just water. But during the time of the Silmarillion, which is like 6,000 years before Lord of the Rings, there used to be another basically continent there, like landmass sticking out. And so that's where everything takes place there. All right. So going off that, though, we're going to go with some important characters to introduce right now. Let's see. So the people that lived in Gondolin were the Noldor. We've heard of them, right?
They are the Light Elves.
Yes.
These are the elves that came over from the other side of the sea.
Correct.
What's that place called?
Valinor.
And these are the elves that came over from Valinor, led by Fëanor.
Yeah.
And settled in Middle-earth, and they're sort of like the greatest species of elves, or greatest race of elves. Is that right?
Well, so they're a third of the elves that went to Valinor originally, because all the elves... Yeah, and then they're the ones that come back. So there's two-thirds of the elves that didn't leave Valinor. But they came back.
Oh, okay.
Because why'd they come back?
I can't remember.
Because there's a really evil guy named...
Morgoth.
Right, and he had stolen...
The Cimmerils.
There we go. All right.
And so, Fëanor, their leader of their clan, made the Cimmerils, or his father made the Cimmerils, right?
No, Fëanor himself did.
Okay, Fëanor made the Cimmerils, so they were... more near and dear to his heart than probably everything else in the world.
Right. Yes. All right. And so he started a war and he brought all the Noldor back to try to get them back. And they actually, when they got back, they couldn't storm Morgoth's fortress, which was in the north of this one continent. So this continent that's west of the Blue Mountains is called Beleriand.
Okay. That's where Valinor is.
No, that's the name of the continent west of the...
Oh, okay.
So like, Bilbo lives in one part of Middle-earth.
Uh-huh.
The part that's now flooded was called Beleriand.
Oh, yeah, okay. So for you listeners out there, Patrick disagrees with my characterization of this, but the way I see it in my head is Valinor is like Japan or the east coast of China, and... Fëanor led the elves over the land bridge in Alaska into North America, which is Middle Earth. The Blue Mountains are kind of like the Rockies or maybe the Sierra Nevadas. The Shire is just to the east of those mountains. At some point, this land bridge in Alaska goes underwater, separating Valinor from Middle Earth. And then there's an island in between the two that we'll touch on later that is the equivalent of Hawaii.
That's so bad. Well,
continue, Patrick, please.
Okay, this is already... Well,
I won't interrupt too much more. I am just going to continue.
I'm not going to.
Okay.
Even though the better example is using Europe, but whatever. All right.
Okay.
So, anyways, so Fëanor's the leader of all the Noldor. He's got a bunch of sons. Then he's got like two half brothers, and they all have sons. So all those people are considered princes and princesses of the ones that came back. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So our story today isn't really going to deal with Fëanor. It's going to deal with some other princes of the Noldor. So one of these princes is named Turgon.
Okay.
And he's cool. And he's from like the good side of the family, but we're not going to break down who's the good side and bad side of that family. In this one, maybe we will some other time. And then, there's another one who's a cousin. So it's not like, it's not a brother, obviously, first cousin. And his name's Finrod. Okay. So that's where we're going to start with. So these are our two starting, guys here. So the Noldor come back to Middle Earth and they Morgoth's fortress is in the north of Beleriand. We forgot this is where we were originally at. So Morgoth's fortress was originally in the north of Beleriand, and so think of it that you can actually consider like, yeah, this is like Alaska, Yukon stuff. Like it's up there really cold. Okay. So there's a bunch of mountains and they're all like snowy and everything. So like they can't surround the fortress, but it's just, you know, icebergs or something beyond that. So it's like, well, nobody's going to go past it anyway. So no worries there. As long as we can cover like the southern front of it, then we're good.
Okay.
And so they do that, and they can, they actually hold like a siege there and keep them hemmed in for hundreds and hundreds of years, but they can't get in to get the Silmarils from them. So they have like a watchful peace is basically what they're doing. Okay.
Okay.
So soon after that started, all these Noldor princes are coming back, and they basically all kind of have like a shift to go watch at the siege that they're holding. But other than that, they kind of go and start their own kingdoms with and like become lords over the people.
Okay.
And so two of these were Turgon and Finrod. And so then one day, they get bored of being in the north near Morgoth, like watching over and everything. So they journey down this big river called Sirion. And you can think of this as it's like of this continent, it's like the Mississippi River. I'll actually give you that one.
Okay. Big river, right in the middle.
Yeah. And so they go, like, I imagine they're canoeing down, just the two by themselves. I don't think anybody else is with them. I think they're pretty adventurous in that, even though they're
forging out into the wild. Has this area been colonized before or settled by elves?
Yeah, there were other elves here before they moved in, and sometimes there have been tension between the two groups. But the elves that were there before are called the Sindar, which are the gray elves. We've talked about them before.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and so anyways, so they're canoeing down, and then they sleep under the banks beneath the summer stars. And again, all this stuff's like, it's really cool imagery, so you should really go read the book. It's a dense, hard read, but it's always pretty outliney, kind of, you know? Like, yeah, it just kind of hits like bullet points almost.
Yeah, it reminded me when we were reading it of a lot of older mythology, particularly like Germanic mythology that I've read. It's like a more utilitarian style almost. You know, there's much less emphasis on character development and like internal emotions, and it's a much more practical, like actions taken, directions traveled, people present. And so some of it feels procedural and some of it is super specific or very descriptive.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
And that's actually what he wanted the Silmarillion to be. Like, that was his goal, was to, like, go in-depth with some of the stories, and some he just kind of wanted to do broad strokes of what happened just so that everybody could get caught up. And he kind of liked leaving it not explained in detail. But, anyways, before we forget, so in Valinor, besides elves that went there, who else lives there?
In Valinor?
Yeah.
I forgot the word, but the gods Iluvatar.
Correct.
Iluvatar is the main god, and then
no,
the Maiar?
No.
The Maiar.
Well, Maiar and the gods are correct. Iluvatar is not. He's outside the world.
What are the gods called?
The Valar. That's where we get
Valar.
Valnor.
Hence Valnor. Okay, so Valar and Maiar.
Right.
Maiar are like the demigods, sort of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cool. All right. So now one of these... So usually the gods kind of chill there and hang out there, and most don't have anything to do with Middle-earth, kind of just to give freedom to the elves and men that are there. Mm-hmm. And actually, the Noldor, when they left Valinor, most of them were banished and kicked out because they did some evil stuff before they left.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the Valar don't really want anything to do with them, though on occasion they all kind of break that. And so the one that probably breaks the most is this guy named Ulmo. So what do you think Ulmo is the god of?
No idea. Fire.
Ulmo? That sounds like fire to you?
No. What does it sound like to you, Patrick?
I don't know, but I already know it's water. Okay, so he's okay. So he's like the water god. So, you know, when they're near a big, huge, powerful river, then Ulmo, you know, he's kind of in control. He can be like anywhere where water is, or, you know, influence anybody around water, whatnot. You know,
gotcha.
So he lays heavy dreams upon Turgon and Finrod, and they're basically like foreboding that evil or something's going to happen, and they need to be ready, kind of. And so, whatever that means. And so, neither said anything to the other because they weren't really clear with what they saw. But both, from then on, wandered around alone, seeking strong, hidden places to hide, like a whole group of people, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, Ulmo had basically bidden them to prepare for an evil day when they would have to retreat for Morgoth. So,
interesting.
Yeah, so that kind of means at some, like, right now they got Morgoth hemmed in the north, but eventually Ulmo is basically foreboding that, well, this is going to fail at some point, and you guys got
and right. And does he choose these two guys for any reason, or they're just in the right place at the right time?
He was definitely choosing well, obviously he wanted princes, you know, who could influence the people to set this up.
Okay. But did he think they were particularly honorable or anything like that?
They're on the higher side of the honorable Noldor princes, I'd say.
Okay.
They're good choices, in my opinion, as opposed to some other choices about characters that we might eventually talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So, yeah. So, all right. So, anyways, Finrod ends up setting up a city called Nargothrond, which we've talked about that before. Where did we talk about it?
In The Hobbit, about dragons.
Yeah, the dragon right? special. Yeah, correct.
That's the first mention of dragons in all of Tolkien's writing?
Yeah, that's where, like, Glaurung attacked that city, you know?
Right.
With Turin.
And we talked pretty extensively about that when we were first talking about Smaug in The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So see those episodes for reference.
Right, yeah. So that's one hidden city. But that's not the hidden city that we care about. We care about what Turgon found. All right. So Turgon, let's see. All right. So, yeah. So Turgon's sitting around at his place, and he's got, like, this nice little castle-looking thing right that overlooks the sea. And so he's sitting there remembering Valinor and the cool city that the elves had there called Tirion.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, man, it'd be really cool if we can make one of those here or something, or if I could find a place where we could do that. You know, I need that hiding spot or whatever. And so then at that point, Ulmo himself actually just straight up appears to him and bids him to go to the Vale of Sirion. So is that where it started? The river started?
Yeah.
Okay. And by Ulmo's guidance, he discovers the hidden Vale of Tumladen and the encircling mountains. All right, so Beleriand's kind of cut off by, like, two... It's divided in half north-south by, like, one mountain chain, basically. So imagine just a plain, then halfway up, there's a mountain chain, then there's another pasture field thing, and then there's the northern mountains that they're guarding, which is where Morgoth's fortress is, okay? And so in between those mountains, there's one gap, and that's where Sirion starts, so, like, the Vale of Sirion will be there. And so that's like a pretty crucial strategic point, and like they have like a watchtower set up and everything. But anyways, if you go just over there, there's a, in one of the sections of mountains, there's like a open circle of just like a plane, and that's what he finds. If you look up like a map of Beleriand, you'll be able to see all this pretty easily.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll continue to try to just describe it as best I can, but it might also help if you just want to look that up as you listen to this.
But the takeaway is they've got a strategic, this is a strategic area.
Yeah, and it's surrounded by mountains. It's like, yeah, it's about the best thing you can get for what they're doing. Okay. All right. So anyways, then he, yeah, and like right in the middle of it, it's like this perfect looking hill. It's like picturesque, perfect site. And he's like, all right, cool. This is a safe spot. And it was really hard to get to. Like I had to walk up like a dried up river, you know, and Olmo was guiding me because it's very hard to find. So this is our spot. And the only people that ever came there were the eagles because they could fly over and they kind of saw it or whatnot. Yeah.
Gotcha. They're the only aerial power.
Right.
Basically. Okay.
It used to be a great ancient lake, is what the book was saying. Okay. So then, yeah, so Turgon sets around having his builders build the place, and it takes him 52 years to get it in decent shape that people can start moving in. Okay?
Okay, okay.
And, yeah, it's got some... Yeah, we don't care about the names. Gondolin means hidden rock. So
okay. Okay.
Yeah, Gond is stone.
So they've got they found this area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so
or rather Turgon has, I should say.
Right, Turgon has, and then he sets his people to working on this hidden city. And then let's see. So then finally after 52 years, Turgon's like, "All right, we're going to all go in secret. I'm not even going to tell the rest of my family. We're all just going to go. All right. And my family, hopefully they don't think I'm dead, but, you know, they'll just know."
And he thought this secrecy is necessary because in the future, the location had to be protected.
Right. Because this, like, he knows that when evil's overrunning all the place, this is going to be a last holdout. All right. So anyways, so Turgon's getting ready to depart and... he's sending most of his people in, like, very quietly to go across over to Gondolin. And then Turgon's and his household are the last ones to leave. And then there's this quote that I want to read here. "Then Turgon prepared to depart from Nevrest and leave his halls in Vinyamar beside the sea. And there Olmo came to him once again and spoke with him. And he said... Now thou shalt go at last to Gondolin Turgon, and I will maintain my power in the Vale of Sirion, and all the waters therein, so that none shall mark thy going, nor shall any find there the hidden entrance against thy will. Longest of all the realms of the Eladi shall Gondolin stand against Melkor. But love not too well the works of thy hands and the devices of thy heart, and remember that the true hope of the Noldor lieth in the west and cometh from the sea." Is there something else I gotta read? Yeah, I gotta read a little bit more here. Okay. "And Olmo warned Turgon that he also lay under the doom of Mandos, which Olmo had no power to remove." So that's like why the Noldor were banished. They were doomed by this one of the Valar because they did evil stuff. And so
Olmo
can't do anything about that. Yeah. "Thus it came to pass," he said, "that the curse of the Noldor shall find thee too ere the end, and treason awake within thy halls, and then they shall be in peril of fire. But if this peril draweth nigh indeed, then even from Nevrest one shall come to warn thee, and from him beyond ruin and fire hope shall be born for elves and men. Leave therefore in this house arms and a sword, that in years to come he may find them. Thus shalt thou know him, and not be deceived." Cool. So that was kind of big. All right.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, so yeah, so it seems like he's saying, okay, this curse on your people is still going to happen, and it'll find you too. And so, like, make Gondolin, love it there, but don't love it too well that you get comfortable, because eventually it'll be, like, the last stronghold, but it'll fall.
So it's a bit weird. He's like, I'm delaying your fall, but it's coming no matter what.
Yeah, but he also says here, too, that from Nevrest, which is where he was before, that's where he was living before, he's going to send somebody else that'll help be like the hope of the people, basically. So that, you know, even though Gondolin will fall, from Turgon's line will come the hero that will eventually save them.
After the fall.
Yeah, after the fall.
Okay.
Right, so. All right, so we got to keep that in mind.
It sounds like a bit Christian.
Well, or it sounds like the King Arthur stuff that we did, which then again, okay. The King Arthur one was more directly based off Christianity. But there have been other prophecies like that throughout history.
But you think, is Tolkien intentionally pulling from that?
I mean, right off the top of my head, it kind of sounds like Achilles was meant to help. Like he had to fall before they were going to destroy Troy, you know? I don't know. It could be close to any of them.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't want to like shoot down your thought, but All right. So anyways, so Turgon took 1/3 of Fingolfin's people. So Fingolfin's his dad. All right. So he's basically, so of the Noldor that returned, he has like, let's say a 10th. So a 10th of the Noldor go, and then a bunch of Sindar people that were already there, they come too.
Okay. This is pretty significant.
Yeah. And then, and so then for the next 350 years, they move to the city and they kind of beautify it up as they live there.
Okay.
But like basically 350 years of peace follow this at least.
Extra mana.
Time for the next story. You ready?
Okay.
Should we dive in or do you need a little breaky?
No. That was just the introduction.
Right, correct.
I'm waiting for things to get started. We have Gondolin in the mountains, protected from the coming doom, but not enough. Okay. Turgon, nephew of Fëanor? Son.
Yeah, no, he's nephew.
A nephew. Son-in-law?
Nephew. He's a nephew, yeah. All right, so we're going to do the next story here. This is like, I don't know, 2 of 4 kind of for tonight. Okay. All right, so Turgon went and he brought his sister with him. Okay.
Okay.
So his sister's name is Arathel. Okay. And so then now Turgon's big rule with Gondolin, biggest rule of them all, is when you go to Gondolin, you can't leave. Okay. Because if you leave, then it's like, well, you know, the location, I can't afford to have anybody out there who knows where this whole hidden city is. I want to keep it hidden.
Okay. Right. Right.
Because almost protecting it that nobody can find it. So all we gotta do is just keep our own people in, okay?
But so do people know about it outside of Gondolin?
No.
They can't,
no.
Right?
Not even Turgon's dad knows that he left.
Okay, so he brings all these people there at the start, and he says, all you, don't leave, don't tell anyone about it.
Right.
Does he bring anyone else in?
No, he brings a 10th of the people over, and that's who's there.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is like one of those HBO shows where like part of the population just disappears and no one knows what happens.
Right, I know. And I'm just thinking like, okay, Turgon, you were pretty close with your brother. You're close with Finrod, who you went on the canoe trip with. Bless you.
Thank you.
And, you know, your dad was still there. Like,
Yeah, I mean, why not bring them?
Well, no, not so much that, but like, you couldn't even tell them? Like, aren't they going to be worried about you? I don't know.
Right.
Then again, I feel like they would know something's up and they would just kind of trust Turgon. That's my, yeah. All right. Anyways, though, his sister, her name is Arathel, gets really bored in Gondolin for some reason, even though it's a really cool city or whatnot. So Turgon extremely, extremely begrudgingly lets her sister go visit her cousins, some of the sons of Fëanor.
She's got to be content living in the mountain fortress.
Well, yeah, and then it's also, I think, well, she's younger than him, so it's not like she was older and she could boss him around or whatnot, you know?
But, right. For all intents and purposes, she's the annoying teenage sister in the story who's like, please let me have a sleepover with my friends.
I don't know. Well, she's older than, no. I mean, she's fully grown up.
She's what, 2,000 years old or something?
Yeah.
Okay, well, point being, she wants to leave. He grants her permission, although he doesn't want to.
Right.
She goes to see her cousins.
Yeah, and so, I don't know. I guess we could dive into that more, but it's really only a couple sentences that we have to go off, so whatever. Yeah, so we're just going to keep going. So, to get to the sons of Fëanor, they live out east, and so right below that big mountain range, that cuts the continent in half. Right below that is the big forest of Doriath, which is where Thingol lives, if you remember him. He's the one that got killed by dwarves, you know, and he had the necklace with the Silmaril in it.
Right, right.
Remember that? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we went into that explaining the rivalry between dwarves and elves, right? Yeah,
that should be like chapter 9 or something,
I think. Okay.
Is when we did it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
All right, anyways. In between the mountains and that forest is like a really evil area, but it's the quickest way over to the Sons of Feanor. So Turgon sends like three of his best lords, basically, to be her bodyguard. But, of course, she gets lost from them in this area because disaster strikes or whatnot. Somehow she gets lost, but there's a good quote in here. She's just like, but she wasn't scared or anything because she was fearless and hardy of heart, as were all the children of Finwë, which all the children of Finwë are the Noldor. But it's just like, you know, like, okay, so cool.
She's not scared because none of them are scared. Right, because how could they be scared?
Yeah, so she gets lost, but anyways, more so, she didn't really get lost. She got separated from the bodyguard, and the bodyguard just goes back to Gondor and is like, Turgon, we screwed up. And Arathel makes it to her cousins, or to their lands, but when she gets there, it sounds like the cousins were out hunting. So she waits for, it seems like a season, so like all of summer, for these people to show up, and they don't. And so then she's wandering around in her cousin's land herself, and then anyways, if you go just east of Doriath, there's another small forest there called Nan Elmoth.
Okay.
And so she wanders into there. And so this one's really enchanted because it has the darkest and tallest trees in Middle-earth.
Okay.
And, like, sunlight can't even pierce it. It's...
Okay.
So it's a very dark place, but it's enchanted. And so the person that lives there is this... He's literally called Ael the Dark Elf. So this, again, kind of gets back to our, like... Dark elves, light elves conversation that we had once,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so he's related to Thingol, and so that means he's part of the Sindar, of the people that always were there.
The Grey Elves. They never went back to Valinor when the Noldor did.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he hates the Noldor because he feels like they, like, usurped his land, you know?
Understood.
Right, okay. But he's really friendly with the dwarves because he's like a craftsman, like him.
Okay.
Like a blacksmith, you know, making stuff and everything. Okay, so anyways, as Arathel grew weary of wandering, she came into his house and he took her in and eventually married her. Okay, so again, we only got a couple sentences to work with. I don't know why she would marry this guy. Yeah, I don't know, but that's what
happened. Well, beware, young women walking in the woods... Going into the cabin, going to get married to the dude in the cabin.
Yeah.
In the old stories.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Anyways, there's a quote here. It said, it is not said that Arathel was wholly unwilling, nor that her life in Nan Elmoth was hateful to her for many years. But the big deal is, Ael forbids her from going out to seek her cousins, and she can't even leave the forest where there's no sunlight. So, you know, why she would marry this guy? Because it's like... Okay, you just left Gondolin because you were bored because you had to stay there forever. Now you're going to go and agree to live in this forest place and stay there forever? I mean, this is ridiculous. What are you doing? All right?
She fell in love. Or she was forced into it.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know which.
Both plausible solutions in my mind.
Well, she said it was. They said it wasn't wholly unwilling, so.
Wasn't wholly unwilling, meaning she would. It was at least partially consensual?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Okay.
All right, anyways. So they have a kid. His name is Meglin. And, you know, when I say, like, their name, when you read this book, they're going to say at least two names for everybody. At least two. Probably three.
Why is that?
Because they have names in different languages. And they mean different things, which is a really weird part. Anyways, Meglin means, or Meglin, whatever. I don't know what I'm going to say throughout this. I'll probably interchange. But that means sharp glance.
Okay.
So now, he looked like the Noldor. But he had the mood and mind of his father, okay? And he was tall and had black hair.
Okay, so he's Wonder Child, basically. Tall, dark, and handsome. He's got...
No, he has really light skin, extremely pale skin.
Okay, but he's got the sort of the glamour of the Noldor and the brooding, practical, gruff nature of his father.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Ael's weird. I wouldn't want anything to do with him.
I'm thinking, like, like a too old Harrison Ford character. I'm thinking like Blade Runner 2040, which I didn't enjoy that much, but Harrison Ford is Ale, and then maybe Ryan Gosling is one of the Noldor.
All right, let's go on. So, so anyways, so Ale goes on a lot of business trips to the dwarves' cities in the mountains. And sometimes he brings Meglin with him or whatnot. But ultimately, Meglin loved his mom more than he loved his dad. And she would tell him stories all about Gondolin, and he really wanted to go there and see it. And so then Arathel and Meglin, eventually they get sick of having to live in the forest, and they get bored. And so they decide to run off back to Gondolin while Ael's on one of his business trips. All right. But, of course, when they do it and they run away, Ale gets back sooner than they expected, and so he starts following their trail, because, you know, they left recently enough that he can still pick out which way they were going or whatnot. And they try to throw him off by, like, going towards the Fëanor cousins and then cutting back to Gondolin, but he was too smart for him. Arathel and Meglin, they get back to Gondolin, and Turgon welcomes him back, and he's really happy. And he's even happy to see Meglin. He's like, oh, yeah, you'll make a great prince here, you know. I'm glad, you know, you're my sister's son, so that's good. And Ael actually manages to find the secret way that they came up, too, which is kind of weird. Whatever.
But he follows him back to Gondolin.
Right, and so he's captured by the guards that are guarding the place. And then he's, like, they were about to take him, like, complete prisoner and lock him up. But he said he's Arathel's wife. So instead of that, they bring him to Turgon himself. And so Turgon actually welcomes Ael as well, on the condition that he can't leave. And since he's already there, that already has to hold. So it's like, you're here. Right. You're done. You got to stay. Okay?
Yeah. And is this, like, a death threat? Like, you try to leave, we have to kill you? Or just...
Yeah, that's
kind of... Unspoken.
Right. Okay, so Ael, you got to remember, though, he hates the Noldor. So, like, he doesn't like that Turgon's welcoming him. And then, also, he doesn't want to live here. He wants to go back to his dark forest where he can be, like, a vampire-ish kind of guy.
Yeah, this dude is no fun. Yeah. You do not want him at your party.
Right. And so then he's like, all right, well, Arathel's your sister, so I can't really control you there, even though she's my wife. But I'm taking Meglin back with me, and Meglin doesn't really want to go. But he's like, no, he's coming with. So Turgon, anyways, at this point, is just like, says no, and points out that Middle-earth is protected by the Noldor. If the Noldor weren't there, it would all be overrun by evil stuff, okay? And basically the words are, like, seriously, like, Ael, you can either live here or you could die here. So Ael... All right, this part's weird, too. I don't really get the story. You know, these are, of course, but there's weird stuff in, like, real mythology, too, which is also fun. So anyways, Ael, at this point, after he had been taken here by guards, whips out of his cloak a javelin. He's been hiding it the entire time. Okay, ridiculous, but whatever. And so then he decides, he's like saying, like, all right, well, if I'm going to die here, I'm going to take my son with me, too. And so he tries to throw it at Meglin. And then Arathel, the mom of Meglin and wife of Ael. Yeah. She jumps in the way and takes the javelin to, like, part of her shoulder or whatnot.
The heart? And,
no, just the shoulder.
Okay.
Heart, you'd be dead. She doesn't die.
Right.
Yeah, so then Turgon's real pissed. But it seems like everything's like, all right, you know, they lock Ael up or whatnot. But it turns out later that night they find out, oh, the javelin was poisoned, and then Arathel dies.
Oh. Right. Might as well have hit her in the heart.
Well, yeah. So now Turgon's real pissed, and he shows no mercy. So he's just like, all right, we're going to execute Ael by throwing him off one of the high walls of the city here. Which is like, dude, that's brutal. I don't know. I wouldn't want to be thrown off a city wall for execution.
Yeah.
I think I'd just
rather... maybe better than being beheaded, but...
I don't know. No, I think beheading's better.
Okay. I'll leave that to you.
Okay. So, anyways... let's see. So yeah, so they're about to throw Ael off the wall, and it's like that really high wall, like super thousands of feet drop, okay? And Meglin's just standing there silent watching all this. And so Ael's last words are, "So you forsake your father and your kin, ill-gotten son. Here shall you fail of all your hopes, and here may you yet die the same death as I." So we got to remember that. So we got to remember things to remember so far. Hope of Men and Elves is going to come out of Gondolin. They left some arms, like a sword and a shield, for somebody at Turgon's old place, because that'll be the Hope. And so they want somebody to come with that so that he can recognize, like, oh, this is Gondolin's time.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And we should remember that line, too, that Ael just said. Got it?
Yes.
All right, cool.
And Ael, and just to be clear, Ael was saying that to Maglin.
Yeah, his son. Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Kind of cursing him as he's going out.
Yeah, so just a couple more things on this story, and then we're done with this one. After this, Maglin, you know, he was, I don't know, both his parents died within a day now, which is kind of weird. But he's pretty successful among the Gondolindrim. That's how they say it, plural, I guess. Gondolindrim. Yeah.
Okay.
And Turgon really likes him, too, so that's good. But, of course, what a surprise. Who would have thought Maglin falls in love with...
Turgon's daughter?
Yeah. And then, like, obviously, of course, she's, like, the most beautiful person in the city.
Yeah, and he's also the most beautiful?
I don't think so.
No?
No. Okay. No.
Okay.
Yeah, right, so that's what... Oh, is that... Did you think that?
He's definitely assumed.
Not. No, he's not.
Okay,
he's not.
Ael's not supposed to be...
Maglin.
No, but Ael was not supposed to be swarthy handsome?
I don't think so.
Okay. I assume most of these characters, the main characters in these stories, tend to be... This is, I think, a trend you see in a lot of older mythology. Germanic literature is like, whoever the main character of the chapter is like, this guy's the best. And then the next chapter, there's a new character, and it's like... This dude, also the best.
Right, I know. this one really does like, it, too.
This guy, greatest fighter that ever lived. Many people would attest to how good of a fighter he is. He killed many people in this battle. Next chapter, different guy. This guy, one of the best fighters to have ever lived. I tend to assume that most of the key characters, if they're talking about beauty, are the most beautiful.
Right, well, let's assume he's not ugly, then. But I don't think he's the best-looking guy.
Okay, so...
I also don't
know. Hold on, but...
I also don't know how to judge best-looking guy.
Is falling in love with Turgon's daughter. What's her name? Do we know?
Idril.
Okay.
Idril Calebrdil.
Aren't they related?
Right.
Cousins?
They'd be first
cousins. First cousins.
Right, so Idril always gets weird vibes from Maglin. Because she's kind of soon realizes, like, oh, yeah, he's into me. This is kind of weird. And then it's already an established custom, so I don't think Maglin ever asked Turgon, but it's already an established custom. Like, the Noldor don't marry first cousins off to each other, because that's too close a relation, you know?
Right.
And so from there, ultimately, his love for Indril or desire or whatever... kind of leads him to have a bit of a dark heart.
Okay.
Even though he's doing well in Gondolin.
Okay.
Story number three. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm ready. So we've got the setup for Gondolin, and now we have Maglin.
Yeah, a crucial character.
Nephew of Turgon.
Right.
Who has fallen in love with Idril, daughter of Turgon.
Correct.
Okay.
So now we got probably, I don't know, a century passes, maybe two centuries, who knows.
Uh-huh.
But a number of years pass, and so in this time, in in the rest of Beleriand, men came over, or some tribes of men came over.
Okay. From Valinor?
No.
No.
From further east. So, like,
okay.
From, like, east, literally east of the Lonely Mountain.
Okay.
Which is really far east.
For my North American analogy that Patrick rejects, men were formed, I think, by the hands of the gods in Maine.
No,
Georgia. Okay.
Let's go to Georgia. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So, on the eastern seaboard, basically. And they've made their way out here to the Canadian Rockies.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
All right, so they align themselves with elves and everything, and maybe we'll get into those at some other point, some of the alliances there. We probably will. Next big thing. The siege that the Noldor had been holding on Morgoth is broken. So Morgoth has, like, a big sudden battle. It's called, like, the Battle of Sudden Fire, because he just kind of launches out all his forces at once, and there was like lava from volcanoes or something shooting up. And so he kind of drives back all the good guys, and lots of people, lots of the Noldor die, like some of the princes die, most notably Torgon's dad himself. Who we'll talk about probably at some point. We, you know, it'd be an injustice not to talk about Turgon's dad, but we won't do it here for a little
bit. Okay.
So,
and does Turgon know about this while it's going on?
He gets wind of it because the eagles actually save his dad's body and they bury him in the mountains overlooking Gondolin. Like, Turgon ends up burying his dad. But Gondolin has no part in this fight whatsoever, and it's still him. Nobody knows where it is still.
Okay. And what's the final outcome of all this battle? Just bloodshed? Territorial change?
So basically everything... So you know there's the mountain range that divides the Beleriand in half?
Right.
So the northern part... So basically the whole front comes down to that mountain range. So everybody's fighting there. So it's the fighting's around Gondolin. Just nobody knows that Gondolin's there, so it's safe.
Right.
Unaffected.
Right.
But everybody else, like, you know, I just said there is the River Sirion. There's like one little pass in those mountains where you can get through. Like, that's like hotly contested now. Yeah, so that's a huge war zone. And sometimes the bad guys can get through it, and then they start spreading out into like the southern part of Beleriand. That's where some of these tribes of men are living. And so one of these tribes was doing the thing where the leaders marry the heads of other tribes to like strengthen their friendship. Typical medieval practice or ancient practice, you know, right? So they're doing that, and then they also even do the practice where they send their sons to live with their uncle for a couple of years to strengthen the bonds there. You see that
a little bit like Game of Thrones,
right? Game of Thrones did it. So the two sons that went to live with their uncle are Hurin and Huor. So they're now Huor. Hurin's 13, but he would still, like, they couldn't stop him from going into battle. So they're having, like, this 13-year-old kid go into battle.
Right.
Hurin's older, so I think he's, like, 16.
Okay.
Right? And so they're with their uncle, whose name is Haldir or whatnot. And so they're fighting near the Vale of Sirion, which is, like, near the entrance to Gondolin. And it's in that strategic hot zone, basically. So they're fighting there, and one day, Hurin and Hurin's company gets cut off from everybody else. And then probably everybody gets wiped out except them. But Ulmo comes and hides him basically in a mist so that nobody can find him. But then they lose their way and get lost around near the entrance to Gondolin.
Okay.
But the eagles see him and pick him up. So the eagles pick him up and they take him over to Gondolin.
Just be like, hey, these guys were on your doorstep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Whatever. You know, again, it's just, we're not going to question it. We only get a couple of sentences to work with on all this stuff.
Right.
So yeah, so Thondor brings him to Gondolin. And so again, Turgon... You know, he's always very welcoming. So he welcomes him again, but, you know, they can't leave. he's always happy to have people there, but they can never leave, you know?
Right.
And he also wants to, he comes to love them and wants to protect them. That's part of the reason, but also because of his own law. And so after about a year there, Hurin and Huor, they want to go back to their people to go fight because they know that their people are in trouble and need protecting and they're growing up and coming of age. And so Hurin, who's the older one, goes up to Turgon and says, look, Turgon, buddy, we're no elves. We can't sit around and wait centuries and years for a battle. We're men, you know. We live to, if we're lucky, 100. You know, we only have a limited time here. We got to use it before we grow old and die. Plus, we actually don't actually know the way here because the eagles flew us in and we didn't actually watch how we got here. And
so pretty smart.
Right. And so Turgon's like thinking this up and he's like, hmm, you know what? Well, if the eagles agree, then they can take you back. I'm actually fine with that. And then Maeglin didn't really like them much because I think he didn't like other people.
Yeah, these are the other cool teenage guys showing up.
And then this might also
competing
be
competing
like,
with him.
And it might also be like the side of his dad. Like, his dad hated the Noldor, but, you know, Maeglin might hate men, even though these are the first two men he's ever seen. But who knows? You know, he probably's like, oh, they're not as good as elves or whatnot. So he's basically, he's like pushing him a little bit like, man, Turgon's really lax if he's going to let you guys go. So then Hurin goes the extra step and he says, I'll swear an oath that we won't reveal the location of Gondolin whatsoever, okay? To anybody.
Right. Right.
Plus, we don't know it anyway, so that's fine. You know? But we won't even tell anybody where we were, is okay. what he's basically saying. So
then, double defense.
Right. So the Eagles take him back to their dad, so not even to the uncle, but to the dad. And Huron's dad questioned him, like, whoa, you guys are back. We all thought you died out in the wild. And Huron's like, nope, we were just living out there, and then the Eagles saved us. And so the dad's like, really, for a year? And Huron's like, yeah, and the dad's like, and you got all these nice clothes, and you're dressed like super fancy, well-groomed princes. And Huron's just like, all right, you know what? Just be content with what I'm telling you, because I'm under an oath of silence, and just be happy that we're back. And the dad never questions them again about it.
Okay, cool. Good for him.
Right, so that's that story. So now we got to fast forward. Here's the fourth story for the night, and then that we can be done.
Okay, okay. How are we doing? It feels like we've got a lot of exposition here.
Yeah, today's all exposition. That's what kind of
Okay. But we're setting up for next week.
Right, yeah. And then especially the week after. The week after is like the only reason we're really doing this. But anyways, this last one's kind of cool. So now we fast forward about 10 or 20 years. That's it. It's not much.
Okay, so
in this time, the Noldor had been fighting at all those, you know, they had been losing ground or whatnot, and the orcs had been attacking from all over the place. So they actually managed to push them all back. They don't have, like, the formal siege on, but, like, all their lands are clear south of the main plain that's, like, in front of the fortress, okay? And so the Noldor, after this, they're seeing this, and they're seeing that Morgoth isn't quite invincible because of other stuff that has happened within this 10-year gap or 20-year gap or whatnot.
Gotcha.
Which we'll come back to at some point. Definitely will come back to this one. And so then there's lots of Noldor living out in the west, which are the direct family members of Turgon. And Gondolin itself is kind of western. And then there's some living out east who are mostly Fëanor's kids. Like they're on the east side of the fortress and then the west side. And then there were some that lived directly south, but they all got wiped out. Some of the sons of Fëanor and the other guys, like Turgon's family, obviously the first cousins, so they've always been pretty well off together. But the two leaders of those sides are Fingon and Methros, and they decide that it's time to do one big ultimate battle, and really, I think now we can storm and get the Silmarils from Morgoth.
Okay.
Where have we heard Fingon and Methros before?
Ooh, I mean, I can't remember. I remember the names, but I don't remember where, to be honest.
So, do remember, Methros was the one that was captured by and taken to the evil fortress Angband or Thangorodrim. That's the fortress in the north of Morgoth.
Okay, okay.
And then Fingon was the cousin, and he went in to save him. And then eventually the Eagles had to come, and then Methros was being held by his hand, and so they had to chop off his hand to get him out, and that was the first time the Eagles appeared, remember?
Gotcha.
We talked about that, would have been chapter 6 of The Hobbit
for that story. When the Eagles first appear in The Hobbit.
Right, correct. Yeah, so they're best buds, or, well, not best buds, but they were best buds as kids, and then they still are good friends now. And so Fingon is the brother of Turgon. And Methros is the oldest son of Fëanor. So they decide Methros is going to gather all his forces in the east, and Fingon will gather all his forces in the west, and they're going to go and have a huge battle against Morgoth in the middle, like meet in the middle and
kill
Morgoth's forces. Okay. So they all set this up, and again, we can't really, you know, I'm basically cutting like half this story out because we only care about one half because that pertains to Gondolin.
Just to dumb it down a little bit for a second. Outside of Gondolin, we have kind of the most powerful princes of the Noldor.
All the Noldor, really.
All the Noldor rallying their forces in two different groups on either side of this giant battlefield.
Yep.
in the north of Beleriand.
Yep.
To fight back against the orcs and the forces of Morgoth.
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Turgon is sitting tight in Gondolin.
Well, actually, somehow he had word of it, and so Methros had all his forces set up in the east, and he's got dwarves under, like, helping him out, and he's got men helping him out. And then Fingon's in the west, and he's got all his elves helping him out, and some tribes of men, including Hurin and Hewer's tribe of men. And then, surprisingly, at the last second, Turgon comes out of Gondolin with a huge force with Maeglin and everybody, and they are going to come and help with the battle, too, because they're like, this is it. Like, let's do it. And so then, you know, Fingon hears about it from miles away, and he's just like all pumped because it's like, ah, oh, finally, it's been like 300 years since I've seen my brother.
You know? Right.
So he's like, well, this will be great. This will be, you know, this is an added bonus. Like, how can we fail now? Kind of thing, you know? And so we got to blow through the early parts of this battle here. So Fingon's pumped. And so then, yeah, so the battle starts, and some of Fingon's guys really jumped the gun and like went on the offensive before they really should have. But despite that, it almost pays off, and they almost go like storm the whole fortress of, it's called Angband or Thangorodrim out in the north there of Morgoth's fortress. And they almost storm it, but then they get pushed back and they start fighting. And then meanwhile, Methros is kind of late coming in the east because some of his reinforcements weren't on time, I guess. And so he's late coming in. So then it's kind of just heated battle, and this battle's like multiple days.
Epic. This is a huge battle.
Right, it's epic. You know, I don't know.
This is way bigger than anything we see in The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It is.
Okay.
So then out east, Methros finally gets in there, and they're all fighting. And, you know, it's like three solid days of straight fighting. And I don't know how a battle works, but I almost even imagine these guys can't even sleep during that. So it's like, yeah, that kind of stuff that you're hearing about. And like this battlefield is just massive. Like, it's got to be miles and miles and miles across. Mm-hmm. Like maybe like 50 or 100 miles kind of thing.
Right.
Really big. So then again, we don't really care about the east because we're dealing with Fingon and Turgon's people out in west. So what happens out west is, or out east is, Methros, one of the groups of men that he enlisted, ends up betraying him because Morgoth had kind of already recruited and bought them like years ago.
One thing I remember, generally speaking, is that men are more corruptible. They're powerful, but they're more corruptible than elves are.
I don't even know if they're more powerful.
They can be very powerful when they put their mind to it.
Yeah, and they're more corruptible, and that's actually something related kind of to, like, the fall. Like, this is supposed to be after, like, the fall of Adam and Eve.
You know? Okay.
Like, there's something there, but we can dive into that some other time.
Okay.
And, yeah, there's really only three good tribes of men that have allied themselves with the elves.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them's, like, already kind of wiped out by this point because of past battles. So there were only two that were really helping him. And they were with Fingon.
Mm-hmm.
And so Methros, the men betray him there. And then Glaurung, that dragon, remember? It also goes after Methros' side. And so those people kind of get all messed up. And so Fëanor's sons all have to retreat and everything. And that side's just lost. So that's going bad. Meanwhile, it's still going pretty... It's hard fighting, but it's going pretty decent in the west. And so they all keep fighting and everything, and then between all the enemies, Fingon and Turgon's companies end up actually cutting through the evil forces to meet each other, just by like I don't know if it was intentional or whatnot. But anyways, they even between all the enemies, like Fingon and Turgon were really happy to see each other because it's literally been centuries since they've seen each other in person. And they're brothers, of course, remember. And so, and then with Fingon at that point, too, is the tribe of men that Hurin and Hewer are leading, because this is like 20 years later. So, like, Hurin's the commander of it. And those guys are from.
They've grown up.
Yeah. And those guys are from this place called Dor Lomond. So, just, yeah, that's like their area. And it's near Fingon's lands or whatnot. So they see Turgon again, too. And Turgon's like, oh, I know all about you guys. Hey, how's it going? You know, glad to see you turned out well. But then from there, the battle gets worse. And so I'm just going to read, like, one paragraph of this here. But now, in the Western battle, Fingon and Turgon were assailed by a tide of foes thrice greater than all the force that was left to them. Gothmog, Lord of Belrogs, High Captain of Angband, was come, and he drove a dark wedge between the elf hosts, surrounding King Fingon and thrusting Turgon and Húrin aside towards the Fen of Sirik. Then he turned upon Fingon. That was a grim meeting. At last, Fingon stood alone with his guard dead about him, and he fought with Gothmog, until another Belrog came behind and cast a thong of fire about him. Then Gothmog hewed him with a black axe, and a white flame sprang up from the helm of Fingon as it was cloven. Thus fell the High King of the Noldor, and they beat him into the dust with their maces and his banner. Blue and silver, they trod into the mire of his blood. So that was how Fingon died. And Turgon, his brother, and Húrin watched it happen, basically.
Some pretty epic.
So at this point, Húrin and Turgon are like, okay, well, now this battle's definitely done. Okay, so then from there, they keep getting pushed back to that one strategic, the Vale of Sirion, which is like the gap in the mountains. Right. So they keep getting pushed back there. And at some point, Húrin just kind of realizes he's like the leader of men because he's the older of Húrin and Húr, right? And so at some point, he realizes, just like, all right, Turgon, you're going to have to go. Like, we were there, and you know, that's why you founded the place, that it was supposed to be the last stronghold, like the secret refuge for everybody to go. So you're going to have to take all these elves here, and you're going to have to get back to Gondolin.
Mm-hmm.
Me, Húr, and the men of Dor Lomond, we're going to hold the rear guard for you so that you can get back.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And so Turgon responds with, not long now can Gondolin be hidden. And being discovered, it must fall. But then Húrin spoke and said, "Yet if it stands but a little while, then out of your house shall come the hope of elves and men. This I say to you, Lord, with the eyes of death. Though we part here forever, and I shall not look on your white walls again, from you and from me, a new star shall arise. Farewell." So that's another important quote that we got to remember for this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. And so then with that, Turgon's basically like, all right, fine. I guess we got to do this. So he gathers all the elves and they like call back to Gondolin through the safety. And the men of Dor Lomond hold up. And it's of all the great deeds of men that happened in the Silmarillion, this is the greatest that men do. Like, but just purely objectively for the book. It's called, like, The Last Stand of the Men of Dor Lomond.
And okay.
It's basically, like, 300 Spartan stuff, you know?
Okay.
All right? Like, they're guarding the mountain pass, and then, meanwhile, the elves are getting back so that they can get back to the hidden place without anybody finding a trace of them.
Right.
And so then...
Because the fear is that the orcs and the armies of Morgoth would track them back.
Yeah, because they would just fight the whole way back, and then they'd find the entrance, you know?
Okay.
But so now,
the men fully sacrifice themselves.
Right, and so now, I don't know, in 300, like, the Persians found, like, some secret passageway to ambush them or whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Here, I think they just get picked off one by one, but, like,
right. They
just keep getting picked off. Húr ends up getting shot in the eye by an arrow.
Damn. And
so that's how he goes.
Not a good place to get shot.
Yeah. And so then, basically, of course, it comes down to just Húrin left. And then this is a cool part. Last of all, Húrin stood alone. Then he cast aside his shield and wielded an axe two-handed. And it is sung that the axe smoked in the black blood of the troll guard of Gothmog until it withered. And each time he slew, Húrin cried, "Aurui Eltunaluva." I'll have to practice that. Okay, whatever.
Okay.
The day shall come again. 70 times he uttered that cry, but they took him at last alive by the command of Morgoth, for the orcs grappled him with their hands, which clung to him still, though he hewed off their arms. and ever their numbers were renewed until at last he fell buried beneath them. And then he basically gets dragged off to Thangorodrim or Angband. The palace up north. And that's that's the end of the Battle of Unnumbered Tears. That's well, so one last
Unnumbered thing. Tears.
Yeah. Where have we heard Hurin before?
I'm not sure.
He's the father of...
He falls in love with an elf, and they live in the woods together, and then the child gets to choose whether it is an elf or... No? Okay. No. Okay.
He's the father of... It rhymes with Hurin.
Turin.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, not to be confused with Turgon.
Correct. Yeah.
Turin is... Who's Turin again?
He was in our dragon special, dude. He faces Glaurung.
Okay, at Nargothrond.
Yeah, he ends up in Nargothrond, yeah.
Okay,
and then
that's right.
He was like he had the curse, like, because Hurin here gets dragged back to Morgoth, and then Morgoth is like, tell me where Gondolin is. And Hurin's like, nah, I'm not doing that. I don't even know. And then he's like, fine. Morgoth's like, all right, fine. I'm going to give you the power of, like, you know, that you can have vision over the whole of Beleriand here, and you're going to watch your kids, and I'm going to curse your kids. And that's how, like, that story went, where, you know, I don't know, Turin's story was very depressing, and then his sister was involved too, if you remember.
Right.
And that was all in our
dream. Yeah, he's the one who just gets, like, totally screwed over.
He gets screwed over, but then, like, that story, it was like, how much is he screwed over, and how much is this his own doing? Because he's...
Okay.
Hothead, basically.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, so I think those are the basic stories that we got to cover here. If you haven't already figured out, Gondolin will not last until Hobbit times. So, so our other two stories, part two and then part three, you'll have to deal with that stuff.
The fall of Gondolin.
Yeah, and so for those, I think we'll actually be able to dive into, like, there's a pretty lengthy stories for both of those of what we're going to cover for both. Like, it's two separate stories. And we can probably talk about, we'll be able to talk about Tolkien's actual writing and some more stuff of what's going on in his life there.
Cool.
But these were just kind of just bang them out. They're fun. I don't know. I have fun.
Yeah.
I have fun.
Agreed.
Rehashing these, but yeah, I don't know. Tell us what you think or didn't think of that, if you want. It's TalkingTolkienPodcast @gmail.com. Yeah. All right. That was not terribly long, but
do we need to sign off?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Wait, say thanks, y'all, again?
Thanks, y'all.